to welcome everyone to Films with a Wind in My Life. My name is Brennan, and joining tonight is Nicole.
Chickening out. Hi!
And Mama Kay.
Hey, howdy, hey!
And tonight, we're doing Flamin' Hot!
Yeehaw!
Sorry, Flamin' Hot. We botched a bunch of intros, so yeah. Flamin' Hot, this is the one that stuck. We did this because it's Oscar season, and this is an Oscar-nominated film.
It is.
You guys didn't know that. You know why you didn't know that? I know you didn't see it before or hear about this at all, because it came up in our catch-up show, and we were talking about Tetris, and I was bringing up the product biopic, which people have talked about, but we haven't talked about it. There's Tetris. We did BlackBerry earlier this year. There was the Air. We did that too. People just making films. We've already been doing biopics about people and singers and politicians. Now we're making them about Cheetos. And you guys thought I was making a joke? No, it was not. Not only was it not a joke, Oscar nominated joke. So, Flamin' Hot. Going in with these couple of things in mind, what were you expecting when you found out it was real?
When I found out the movie was real?
Once we were, I was like, no, this isn't a joke. Flamin' Hot, real movie. Oscar-nominated movie. And you guys were like, well, that's ridiculous. And then we're like, all right, I guess we're going to, you know.
Well, and I'm having the same effect right now because, like, I don't remember any part of that happening during that conversation. So, during that podcast. I didn't make any connection whatsoever, but I did notice that this does happen.
Why did you think we were doing this then?
Flamin' Hot?
Why did you think? What made you think that this came up?
I don't know.
you messaged me. We were just going to do Driveaway Dolls and then maybe catch. But then you said, are we doing Flamin' Hot? I'm like, I mean, I thought that was a joke, but yeah, I mean, I guess we can. It is streaming. I mean, Nicole doesn't want to go to theaters, so that'll be an easy one for her. Like,
I don't know how this all came up. All I know is all of a sudden I was obsessed with having to see it. So here we go. Like, that's, that's
me. You know what I was thinking about?
Cheetos?
What were you thinking about?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about Cheetos, but I was thinking about, which I still don't know if it was a joke or not, was when they did the KFC thing with Mario Lopez. Remember when he was Sexy Colonel?
Who's they?
The people.
Wait.
Everyone's I know you're referencing.
Are you talking about was Mario Lopez the Colonel Mario Lopez in this movie?
No, Mario Lopez played Sexy Colonel Sanders.
I know what you're talking about there. Oh, you thought this
you asked
was
me
like
what
that.
I thought about this movie was going to be, and I am telling you, I thought it was going to be similar to Sexy Colonel Sanders, played by Mario Lopez.
I'm sorry, I missed the plot somewhere in there. I thought you were expecting.
I don't know
that
what the plot of A Recipe for Seduction is, but that is the name of the Colonel Sanders.
Wait, this is something that exists?
Yes.
No, we're not doing another review of this. We're not just going to keep daisy chaining this into progressively more ridiculous reviews every time. Wait, that's actually a movie? Every week. We don't even do other real movies anymore.
No,
that's what I thought it was going to be, because I thought that was fake, but then I've come to learn that that's not fake. It's a Lifetime movie.
The Colonel Sanders one.
It's called A Recipe for Seduction.
I didn't know that was real. That's I saw terrible. The commercials. I thought that was just part of the gimmick, but okay.
It's real?
All right, well, we're all caught up now.
Yeah.
No, it's all real. Well, actually, everything's none of it's real. Richard Montañez, the son of a Mexican immigrant, was a janitor at Frito-Lay when he came up with the idea for Flamin' Hot Cheetos. His creation inspired the flavors of his community, revitalizes... inspired by the...
What the fuck are you saying?
I have had too many Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
You know, you read so many of these and no one notices at all when you read it perfectly, but then you... the commas are weird. His creation... inspired by the flavors of his community, revitalizes Frito-Lay and disrupts the food industry. I didn't even need that sentence. It's useless. Useless sentence. 69%. Completely useless. 69% on Rotten Tomatoes with the critics with an 88 88% with the audience, a 6.8 IMDb, 58% with the audience. Yes, 88%, 6.8 IMDb, 58 Metacritic. How many so people? I don't know.
Well, there's at least three.
Rotten Tomatoes is at least three.
2.5 people said they liked it.
It says a 1,000+ ratings. Oh, so okay. a lot of people voiced their opinion, and almost nine out of 10 recommended it, kind of like dentists and toothpaste. So
it's a racket. What it is.
It's all a racket. If you haven't seen Flamin' Hot, it's on Hulu. Pepsi Max. It's on Hulu.
Yeah.
Pepsi Max is a drink, not a streaming service.
Pepsi Max.
It's Flamin' Hot on Hulu, and we are going to spoil it here now. So, Richard Montañez is the guy we're following, the principal character. He is a hardworking immigrant or son of an immigrant, mm-hmm. and he is like a little kid. If we follow up at the beginning, he hustles and he gets made fun of at school for being a brown kid, but his mom makes good burritos, and yeah. he turns that into a side hustle where he sells burritos to children. But then the police and the store owner, they do not like him because he is not a white child. So he learns very early on that people do not like him, and he's got to hustle if he's going to try to make it. Because that's
yeah, he's
the kind
a criminal
because
he's one, you know, yeah. definitely a criminal
because
the
way
brown.
He looks,
yeah.
So now you fast forward to the future, and of course he's going to be struggling and hustling, and he gets a job as a janitor for Frito-Lay. How could this be profitable for Frito-Lay? And the company is struggling. He meets the Allstate man. Are you in good hands? And he's got a jerk boss. The company's struggling. He takes home some like plain chips off the line, plain Cheeto Dorito chips, and he's experimenting with the flavors of the chips. And one of the flavor combinations he tries is very reminiscent of Mexican street corn, elotes. Mm. And it's that red, fiery, hot color that we noted today as flaming hot, the flavor. It's that red color. And it's, you know, it's a spicy, delicious pepper flavor. And so he brings that to the CEO, he's got those Cheeto fingers, the iconic Cheeto fingers,
yes.
And it's just a underdog, heartwarming economic tale of business and capitalism, and hardworking immigrants, there's, you know, it's based on a true story, but we'll get into that because
is
not,
it
not really
is it based yeah. on a true story? I mean, it is based on a true story, so.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Nicole, what did you think of Flamin' Hot?
Ooh. I thought the beginning was god awful. It was
You mean when it was the 70s and he was a little kid? Or when he got to Frito-Lay?
Like the time from childhood to the Frito-Lay, the backstory.
Okay.
That was just so boring. And it wasn't, I guess, because it was mildly exaggerated, but I think the voiceovers were way too over the top for what we were, like, actually watching him do. Like, you know, he's talking about being this criminal and his family, his dad was a criminal and all this stuff, and they're, like, just driving around town. Like, they weren't doing anything. So, I don't know if they were trying to keep it, like, a PG or something. I don't know, but, I just thought that was kind of boring. By the two-thirds way, I was really, feeling happy for this guy. Like, I was invested in the story at that point.
You came around to liking him, did you?
I did. I liked him, and I liked his dedication to trying to better his family and his situation. That was the feel-good part, really was a feel-good story for me. I got lost in the timeline for sure. Didn't know what year this was supposed to be. Didn't know how long time has passed. I mean, it was pretty rough in terms of like plot setup and how they made it. I really had to just take the information I was given and just kind of go with it because it is so absolutely ridiculous. and I feel like we skipped a lot of time and a lot of steps to get to where we ended up. So I don't know if that's really how it happened or if we're missing like a solid 20-year chunk.
There's a lot of incorrect information we'll get to as we go through. But you're right. When you're watching this, you're like, this is how things are done? This doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, he goes company. Up to mop a room and he's got his name on the door. That's just incredible. Like,
yeah.
Can't imagine.
I don't know why they keep calling the janitor at the distribution center for years. They keep
calling
him. But
I guess we just had to get through it, I guess. But you know what? I thought at the end of the day, it was a fairly feel good story that I came around to. At the end, the best part of this movie for me actually is the very ending, seeing the real guy, seeing the picture of him with his family and the wife that stuck by him, which, if this is accurate, since elementary school, like, that right. is the best part of it. But yeah, the rest of it is something.
Flaming hot. It started cool, but you warmed up to it. Oh. I'm okay.
Did you get flaming hot, though? I don't know if you got to that.
I did not get flaming hot.
I don't think you could with this movie because it was just like a little, here's a story, it's a feel-good movie, you know, a little guy somehow kind of beats the corporate baddies, right? But becomes one, sort of, at the end, too. Yeah. So is he now, you know, is he now the villain?
He's become the demons he was fighting all along.
Exactly.
I thought there was going to be a third act challenge that we can get to, but like Nicole, I was like, oh, is he going to have to be challenged here? I'm like, nah, this movie's way too fluffy. There's no way.
Yeah, and it's what, an hour and a half long? It's not, you know.
Yeah, scant, hour 40 maybe.
Yeah, something like that. So I know these people. Like, this is the neighborhood I grew up in. These people all looked very familiar to me from the street elote to the vatos in their cars, and you know, the fact that it's exaggerated that there was no opportunity except for to be a janitor, but they are out in, you know, a place, Rancho Cucamonga, where he's from, there wasn't a lot for people, and so if you got a job at the factory, it was a good deal. So the irony is, we lived in Bakersfield, California, which is mentioned in this movie, and the plant in Bakersfield, and everybody hates the plant in Bakersfield. The Bakersfield's even doing better than us. It's crazy. And I used to have to drive by that plant every day. So you would see all the Frito-Lay trucks and, you know, Frito-Lay workers and everybody all the time. So there was a lot in this movie that was very sentimental for me because it felt very much... This felt like me growing up, and even the time frame, I think it started in like the early 70s, right? But I feel like he was probably a little
when
bit.
When he was a kid, it was like late 60s.
Late 60s, yeah.
Once he's an adult, it's like late 70s, early 80s.
Maybe, but they really did not like stick to any sort of real time frame. You're right. It was like
this... He goes from being a 5-year-old to a 47-year-old man, and then he's a 47-year-old man for 20 years, so
right.
You know, whatever.
And he's mopping the floor for a long, long time. And your dad was watching part of this with me, and his job is to make these kind of plants in manufacturing facilities, and he was just losing his mind. He's like, they are in a food plant, and no one is wearing any sort of protective gear. There's no hair nets. That guy right there should be wearing goggles. What? They don't have anything on their
feet. He's the Matt Walsh character.
Yeah, pretty much. It was just like, you can't stick your hand on a conveyor belt and pull a chip off of it. Like, that's like,
oh my god, I said that too.
OSHA safety standards being violated 1,000%. But that's not this movie. This movie really is a total glossing over of this story, and I'm sure we'll talk about the fact that it is sort of quote unquote a story. But it's,
I have a question for you.
Cute. Yeah.
The size of this factory is really what's throwing me off during this whole film. It seems very small. Do you recall the size of that factory and if this is anything. It looked like there was about 50 employees at this place.
It looked like the room in where they make the Everlasting Gobstoppers in the 1971 Willy Wonka. It's a not large room.
No, and they're doing so many things in this quote room that they're showing us. They're, you know, they are making the chip.
It's a busy room.
They're packaging it. They're, you know, you can't do all of that in a room that size.
Anyone who works at a plant will tell you they don't do every step
They make 50 bags worth of chips at a time, and then
the oven right next to where they pack it. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you have to expand that by, you know, 10, probably, to get the size of the factory.
Do you remember the size of the one that you used to see?
Oh, huge. Monstrous. Yeah. I mean, just not... I'm really bad with numbers, but it's like I said, it's 10 to 20 times the size of what we saw on screen.
That was so funny.
So, but the thing is about that factory, and the first time they showed it when he first got the job of this friend, you know, that worked there, there were people just walking around, and I'm like, that doesn't happen. You're doing a job when you're there. You're not just like walking and
people move with intention in plants. There's no dawdling
right.
on factory floor.
Exactly. It was really strange. And the little lunchroom thing, that seemed very familiar. I don't know if you remember going to the Poland Spring plant when we first moved here. And do you remember going there, Brennan, and seeing that plant? That's the size of a plant. Like, that's how big
it remember seeing a lot of plants back then, because for some reason we toured plants like at school. Like, we went to a packaging plant.
Right.
We went to the water plant. But we went to a plant.
A fair amount of factories. What?
I've been to a fair amount of factories in my day. I really have.
Yeah. So it's much...
This one struck me as small. Yeah.
Yeah, that's small. And you just... The running of it was just so strange. And the fact that, you know, he was going to start mashing buttons and turning knobs and stuff like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the plant goes down and, you know, people lose jobs. That's... You can't do that. So... It was that part of it is so that you have to suspend belief for a lot of this, but you really just have to really embrace the heartwarming story that it's trying to tell. I actually liked the voiceover pieces. It would have been only better for me if all of that was done by Michael Peña. That would have been so great. Especially some of the times
they do the talking over they do the Michael Peña thing. Like they just steal it. There's no
They steal it from him and they don't do it as well, so it's annoying.
No, I can't be like, it's an homage, it's similar. I'm like, no, it's aping an exact style and executed with slightly less flair.
Yeah.
It's a ripoff, no other way to call it.
Yeah. And it's usually when he's, you know, telling a story about, or he's saying what he thought when he was on the plant floor and he wanted to hit the supervisor and they showed that happening. And your dad was like, oh my God. And I'm like, he's didn't really do that. He's just thinking.
He bought in after all these years. He's a 60-year-old man and he can still get suckered into these things.
Of course he can. He's what these movies are made for. He's what all of this stuff is made for.
He's the ultimate consumer. Probably 5,000 movies in his life and he's still.
Yeah.
He got sucker punched just like the guy in the not real scene.
And I was like, I don't think he's ever even seen that in real life, even, you know, with all the manufacturing facilities that he's been in. So, you know, it's not like he was having a flashback. So anyway, that's my initial take on this. I'm sure we have some things to talk about. Like elote, which is the best thing ever.
I couldn't tell if those were positive or negative words from you at the beginning.
Just the whole everything I just said. Okay.
Yeah, it was just kind of like it was information. But now I'm sitting here. I'm like, I don't know if she liked it though. I don't know if she liked.
Well,
it.
Well, I might be holding on to that.
I suppose that's an effective way.
Exactly.
This is like a really bad TV movie, and I am baffled that it's fooling people at all. I don't know how this has any good rate. Like, it's got the ratings it does. It doesn't make any sense to me. This is kind of junk. I don't think I don't think there's anything good in here, really. Like, I think, it's bad. I don't get it. I was with you, Nicole, at the beginning. I was like, wow, this is like really boring. But I never joined a side, unfortunately. I just continued thinking this is not like a real movie. This is like a, it's just so, oh my god. Like, of when we're talking the product biopics, of the four I mentioned before, I didn't see Tetris, but compared to Air and Blackberry, this is just like blatant junk.
Yeah, I, it's, just don't, I don't know what else think to call it's it. Anything like that, and it's definitely not, I mean, Tetris is a better made film than this, for sure.
As a Tetris is also better. So this is the weakest of the of those movies.
As far as filmmaking, absolutely.
Just like it's very straightforward, and it's a yummy, easy, feel-good feeling,
mm-hmm.
but it's so, so telegraphed and unoriginal, and like we just said, like the Michael Peña bit, like I rolled at that because I'm like, it's like so 15 years ago, and it's not new at all. It's not like there's no twist or anything on it. It's so just blatantly meh. And the guy with the Cheeto fingers, like the CEO of the Cheeto fingers, that he calls, he's like, oh, give me the number to this. It's Good Hot or whatever they say. Like, it's just everything about how this is just put the constant voiceover is annoying as hell. It's so irritating. He's not this guy. What's this? Jesse Garcia. I don't know him from things. Perhaps he's better elsewhere. Not charmed by his ways. This was a slog, and I was hoping it would be like some funny bad stuff, but it was mostly me trying to make my own humor, making Allstate jokes because Dennis Haysbert's in here being a Dennis Haysbert character. But like, it's just and when we get into like the reality of the situation, it's a big fucking stupid lie. It's a bunch of lies in this movie. It's one of the
what
least.
What do you mean by that? Please elaborate what you're talking about.
We'll just get right into the lying about this.
Let's just lie.
Let's talk about the lies.
Richard Montañez did not make the Flamin' Hot Cheeto.
Why?
Debatable.
He did not. The timeline of the of all of this has been backed
it's been
up,
debunked. Debunked.
LA Times and NPR both did a whole deep dive, and I don't want to have to go read through all the details, but basically, the timelines for his claims do not match that he has in his book. This is based on a book, his right. book. So it's his truth, and that's what Eva Longoria, director, actress, other things, said for making this movie. She's like, this is his truth. This is not about, like, the factual backstory of creating the Flamin' Hot Cheeto. This is about Montañez. And if that's your story, that's fine. But it's like he in 1989, McCormick, the spice company, was getting samples for a Flaming Hot recipe. 1990, in the summer, they already had patents going on it, and then it was going into test markets in, what do I got? Chicago, Detroit, Houston, not LA.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then also, like, his claims in this movie that he worked as a janitor this whole time, and, like, obviously these things are going to not line up. He was a janitor when he was hired there when he was 18, and then became a machinist in a year, and then in 1977, so the whole time period this movie takes place, he's not a janitor. He's a machinist in real life, this gentleman. And he was a machinist until the early 90s, where he was promoted to senior machinist. And then he became a marketing executive later on. And I would argue the gentleman is a very good marketer, an excellent one, because he made up a whole memoir. And now he goes on speaking tours about his probably lie. Like there's just nothing really concrete other than his, like, I was there in the meetings, and I was going on the streets to pitch it to my community, and that's just like, there's just no paper trail to indicate any of that happened. So, and then to couple that into the fact that there's already admitted embellishments. The CEO, that guy that they portrayed, he wasn't hired until a couple of years after the Flamin' Hot
thing.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, he came on after Flamin' Hot was like 2 years into the development. So that whole cheat, like, I know this is a movie, and those are the kind of embellishments I could forgive if it was, one, better, more entertaining, I liked it at all, and two, if, like, the core central premise wasn't so in question. And I don't see anything that would say, other than him, that anyone's even claiming that he really made it the way, like, I took the chip off the line and I went home with my family and we were testing all the flavors, like,
and I got all my friends to give them out for free, that Lay's Lay's would, or Frito-Lay would, whatever the fuck it
Frito-Lay.
Is. Frito-Lay. Totally to be. Would be fine with them taking this $1,000, thousands of dollars of sales off the shelves to go give out for free to the townspeople in hopes that they're going to go buy more. That is so crazy. Mm. Their proprietary formula that they're just giving out to anybody before it's even like patented, whatever you got to do with it. It's so crazy.
And that's what just makes me so cynical about this. I'm watching it. I'm not really enjoying it. I find it super cheesy, the voiceover. Everything feels copied, stolen. And then I'm thinking about this guy who made this product. I'm just like, you tell me what's more plausible. That maybe he did make this, and maybe he did it, and he has more hand in it than is given credit to in real life. Or maybe the master marketer guy, the guy who's making ads, embellishing a Don Draper for the Latinos, and you think maybe he's embellishing a few things about his own story? I think that's a little more of a plausible explanation.
There's a piece of it. I mean, because he became part of the marketing team, I think you have to believe that he had a hand in marketing it to the community, because they were, like you said, they were doing it in Chicago and other, they weren't doing, you know, Los Angeles is heavily Latino, and that's basically the area we're talking about here is, you know, central Southern California. And the fact that they weren't marketing it there makes it, you know, it's like, what are they thinking? What are the people within Frito-Lay thinking? That's totally, you know, those are the people that are going to buy your product. So
the fact that be profitable for Frito-Lay, that's what they're thinking.
I don't know what they're thinking. He did say,
you're not getting that reference, the Jesse Plemons reference, 3 for 1.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just I thought you knew talk.
That. Sorry, go ahead. I thought you knew that reference. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. He did bring up, from what I've read afterwards, because I was like, this whole thing seems really implausible on so many levels. It's a fun story, but it seems not plausible. So I did do some reading afterwards, and it seems like he came up with the idea for the Flaming Hot popcorn that was on, you know, after the Flaming Hot Cheeto and maybe Dorito or whatever else were the other ones before that, but that he was instrumental in all the
nothing to do with it
in all the different flavor in all the different flavors that were being marketed to the Latinos. They admit that he was instrumental in that, so which is a huge piece of the marketplace in a place like Los Angeles, or even, you know, down the road, you're talking about places like Arizona, New Mexico, where Texas, even, where there's a huge, huge Latino communities. So
that's what's so interesting when I was reading about it, is that they were like, we do not want to downplay Mr. Montañez's impact in the company. He's been great. Like, everything I've read, it says he was awesome, but he did not make Flamin' Hot. Like, that whole book is bullshit. Like, that book is bullshit. Like, he did not do that. But, like, yes, he was a very good marketing director for us for 3 decades or whatever. And I believe both is true. Like, I believe that.
Yeah, I think that's
probably true. But he's probably like, but my personal brand is bigger than this company. And Frito-Lay is probably like, you know what? He's made us enough money. And, like, you know, we don't like it. We got to protect our own asses. But, like, you know, we can keep working with him. This is fun. You know, when you get to that level, that's
kind of, I don't know. I think big corporations like that are more likely to cut somebody off if they're trying to, like, you know, hone in on their business stuff.
He could have, but by all accounts, I mean, they don't seem to have any sort of animosity other than the fact they disagree on this one thing. But
that's what makes me think that he had a bigger hand in it than you're giving him credit for.
This is kind of a rubber test for how much can you embellish in a movie and, like, find it okay. Maybe if this was, like, a really great movie, I would forgive it, but
I don't think that's fair. I think that you're not going to believe the story because it's a poorly made story. That's kind of unfair.
I'm not going to believe this story because I don't think it's true. And then I think the movie's not well made on top of that. So there's there's no reason for me to forgive it for, like, artistically. Like, oh, you're changing the movie for artistic visions. I don't believe any of the changes were made for artistic. I think they were all made cynically and for commerce reasons at the best. And, like, so that's not really, like, a rewarding type of choice, I think.
What if the whole thing was just set up for this movie to get an Oscar nom for best song?
Yeah, so the best song, which I forgot.
Is that the ending credit song?
It has to be. What else is
there? Yeah, I was trying to figure out.
So Nicole said she was like, it started, Eva Longoria just came up, and then a song started playing with the spicy Cheeto dust flying in the background. Nicole says, is that the song? I'm like, oh shit, that's why we watched this movie. That's right. This is Oscar nominated for that song. And I'm like, it's just a song. I mean, it's fine. It's good. It's catchy.
I don't think it's going to win the Oscar. Just to say, I'm putting that out.
No, it'll be one of the Barbie songs, right?
Yeah, I'm just Ken.
No, it'll be the other one. It won't be.
I know. Yeah, I think that's got to be the song. So maybe that's the whole thing. Let's talk about the fact that this is Eva Longoria's, you know, first movie that she's directed.
I think she should be gonna be a great TV director because this is
she's known for her TV. So.
Exactly, she's a TV actress, and I think that this falls right into that, you know, that category. So
I think that's perfectly appropriate, and this is fine to have on. I wish something of this lower quality were, you know, true, somewhat, but like it's just so conventional and boring and like I just don't get the praise. Like 69% with critics is very high for a thing like this, and then 88% with the audience. 9 out of 10 people are gonna go thumbs up with this. Really, I mean,
I'm gonna blame it on your upbringing.
I mean, well, that's your fault. I said that's your fault. I mean,
I think that if any of this,
every time I point, four fingers are pointing back at me.
Oh God. What is wrong with you tonight?
When you point the finger at someone else, four fingers are pointing back at you.
Yeah, I know.
Is the dog outside?
Yeah, I'll get her.
Okay.
This is just, for me, this movie has it's what I know. It's what I grew up with, and it was all very sentimental to watch all of this happening. So I enjoyed it. I saw it from probably a very different lens than a lot of people would, though. So, I know it's hard to.
Oh no, Nicole! I mean, Nicole's not from this area. She was low on it. Came around, came back in. She's been not as vocal in its defense, not as harsh. Damning in its condemnation. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's. I don't find the lying offensive about it. Like,
me either.
It's like right on the edge.
And I don't know. If someone's going to pick it up and say, hey, I know your story's not legit, but good for you for saying what you want, and you still were successful. Who tells the truth nowadays? Like, who doesn't embellish?
What is the truth?
No, I am not against lying. I'm against lying, and then if you lie and you make a better thing, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. But this is like he took his. It's just not honest. It's just like I'm making like a cookie cutter story because it's just a basic rags to riches story, and it's not his real rags to riches story.
Nobody wants to watch someone climb the corporate ladder.
I want to watch this guy. I want to watch this guy. This guy's clearly a really smart guy. Probably a kind of conniving guy, honestly, if he's going to make moves like this. Like, I want to see the guy who did hustle and he was gritty and he became a savvy machinist.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's savvy. This guy's clearly didn't savvy.
Exist at this company at that time, so why not listen to the guy who's going to say something and make a story about it?
The guy I'm watching on screen, I don't think is representing the real man. He's representing a mythical character that's there to put butts in seats. And that's just frustrating because I think the real man is probably a very interesting person that I would want to explore, even though
character. You had to know that there was some tomfoolery here. I mean,
tomfoolery. What do you
if you think about the lead machine guy,
Clarence.
The Allstate guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy's been there for 20 fucking years and he still is doing the same exact thing. Like, you can't expect that this actually happened this way. I mean, I didn't know about these lies per se, but like, I didn't think this was legitimately how it happened.
No, and I usually am not such a stickler for the truth, but this one feels like a bridge too far because the whole core of the movie is I made this because I'm a hardworking immigrant and I was a janitor. I was the lowest on the totem pole. No, you weren't the lowest on the totem pole. And like, oh, I made this spice with my, like, no, you didn't make the spice. McCormick made this spice after probably a bunch of basic lab testing, like every other chemical company that's ever existed. Like, they probably went through regular proper channels, and maybe you, sir, yes, you probably showed up and crafted this fun story. And it's a fun story for people, I'm sure, if told by your guy.
Of course he did.
Exactly. He's a marketing guy. So he's going to spend. But I wanted to watch the movie where this marketing guy, he stumbles into the company's flailing Frito-Lay. And then he dusts off a print for this. And he sees like, oh, this, that stupid thing, that project's never going to go anywhere. It's 2 years in the can. And he's like, oh, but maybe I can. And then he tricks everybody. Like, I want to see him be kind of mean-spirited, or like, no, just like,
I don't want to see that movie at all.
I want to see that because the whole thing is a lie. He needs to be what I like think of as like a liar, who's like someone who's going to say whatever to get his brand across. You know?
I don't think he feels he's a liar. I don't think he feels like he's a liar, and I don't know that he wasn't storyteller. I don't know if he's doing all, I don't know that he wasn't doing all of these things at the same time that Frito-Lay was making, you know, their stuff in the lab, which is what they're saying, is that these things were happening simultaneously, but that they weren't marketing it, but they, you know, they ended up marketing it. But who's to say that that wasn't really happening? His embellishment is the timeline. His embellishment is the fact that he wasn't a janitor for
Isabel Smith is his kids were years. Shaking the bags of the Fritos with the
how do you know that's an embellishment? You don't know that. That's
I believe an that is the embellishment. I believe that's the part that's sticking in my craw, is that I think he is. I think people think that his family were sitting around the fire at home, and they had their spices from their street corn on there, and they were like, this is going to save the factory, Dad. And he was like, I know, son, this is the one. And then they took it in, and then the corporate, and then they met resistance, but their idea got pushed through. And I just don't buy that one iota. What is it?
He's an opportunist, because nobody else was coming out and saying, hey, look at what we did. Look at what I did. And even if he's just speaking for himself, this movie ever makes it the intention is not to say I did this alone. It's that I got the product to where it needed to be, and they appreciated that from me. And he's the only one that stood up and said, hey, I had a part in this, so I'm going to talk about it. And I'm going to be the one that has my face to it. Okay, but that's exactly what I want. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe if he highlighted, and I like that he highlights his buddy, the Dennis Haysbert character, who's based on a real person who died before this project was complete, so they changed the name. But maybe if he made it more feel that way, more ensemble-y, more community feeling, and like, or not him, like it's a.
Well, that's the whole point of having all of his friends out on the street go.
It doesn't feel like that, though. It doesn't feel like that. I'm watching that, though. It feels like I'm watching the Richard Montagna's exceptionalism story. Like all the platitudes and fake situations. Like the bullies, even from the very beginning, the bullies. You're brown. You like burritos, and then he's like, oh no, I feel bad. Well, what if I use my smarts and sell the burrito? And then this is pretty good. Like that's, and then that, it just never loses that like tone of just like, oh, people are so mean to me because I'm just such an underdog. But you know what? I'm gonna turn it around and make something and make a little thing out of it. You know? And like, I just don't believe you. I just don't believe you because you embellish so much that I think you're just like a really good marketing salesperson. And so I want to see the movie I want to watch, if that's who you are, and that seems to be who you are. I want to watch you wheel and deal and like make these embellishments and like win over the market share for the company with your wheeling ways. Maybe you take the idea from someone else. And I don't know. Like if this just seems like a more interesting way to still make a compelling movie and get the story across.
That's a terrible made for TV movie, Brennan.
But that's the, this doesn't have to, it didn't have to be this.
But that's what this, no, it did have to be this, because it was directed by Ava Longoria, and that's what it was going to be. This is the story that it was going to be. It's a story that's,
this is got, so...
it's riddled with holes, and it's not, it's...
It's riddled with studio notes, and safe choices, and boring choices.
That's, yeah, what, sometimes that's what movies are. Sorry. I feel like we've had this conversation a few times in the last several movies. That's just sometimes what movies are.
Hmm. Do we recommend, what is this, Flamin' Hot? Do we recommend Flamin' Hot? Nicole?
I'm going to say no.
Oh, I thought you were going to recommend it.
I thought she was going to soft thought, recommend it.
I only say no because the cheese factor is just a little too high for me. It's just that lame that
it
I
is lame.
Can't.
It's so lame.
Yeah. And we actually had to stop it, like,
we did
about an hour in, because I think we were both like, we've had enough of this for the night, let's return. We went back the next day to finish it, and that's when I felt a little bit better about it. I guess I wasn't being bogged down by the first hour in my mind as much, and it was, like, better.
But I'll give you that. It was more palatable the last 40 minutes. Yeah.
The hyperbole of it all is just like, okay, we should have done more over the top, or we should have just made this like a Lifetime movie where it's just, these are what happens every day. We do step one, step two, step three, and it leads to step four. Like, this was just, it was too much in the middle. I don't know, it was weird.
Yeah, if we wanted to make it as cheesy as that last little bit, it, like, once like he gets the people to show up, like, he gets, like, his neighborhood friends to show up to the factory, and, like, we're gonna just grab the boxes and take them to the neighborhood and take it to the streets, and it's like, oh my god, this is like a parody at this point. This
These gangbangers are like, all right, everyone, grab the boxes, we're bringing them out to the town. And then Matt Walsh,
he's gonna put the clipboard on, he's like, here, you get the clipboard now. Like, come on, I can movie. I can only go with you so far. This is absurd. This is cartoonish. This is, I can't, anyway. But okay. Flame It Hot.
Yeah, I'm recommending this movie. It's
stupid.
It might be stupid, but I'm recommending it for sentimental reasons only. They mentioned my hometown that I was born in, Oxnard, California, 805 represent. And also Bakersfield, which I was so glad to get out of, but did know the factory. I thought I it's too sentimental for me to say no. And I would have loved Michael Pena to play the original character. So,
no, he was doing that astronaut movie, which we watched part of, and was also quite boring. But
I didn't even watch it.
It was on in the room. It was on
the room where it happened.
It was unremarkable. Flamin' Hot, no good. I have actually disliked this.
No bueno.
This is on that cynical. I don't want to say the man's name, Adam Sandler. We haven't talked about him in a while, but it's on that same level of just like, I only see commercial eyes behind this, and I understand how the world works, but I would like some art, I would like some effort, I would like something put in there for some storytelling, something original, and this just reeks of stealing, ripping off, getting away with the bare minimum. Bland boilerplate, easy, just no empty calories. As empty as the snacks they sell is the calories in this film. So, Flamin' Hot, no, do not. It's one recommend, two not recommends for Flamin' Hot from this panel. Oscar nominated film. We like the song? We're saying no? Gonna lose to Barbie?
No, what the fuck was the song?
I don't even know what that song was.
It was like some really bad BB Rexha something or other song.
It was like in the fire with your fire. Soul is on fire.
Flaming hot.
Flaming. Got your flame on fire.
Okay.
The Fire Inside. There you go. That's what it's called. By Diane Warren.
Diane Warren. She writes all kinds of Oscar nominated songs.
Oh, okay, so she's
legitimately
on this one.
Yes,
she still got the nom though. Mm. All right, Flamin' Hot in the books. Oscars are going to be coming out right and around when you're hearing this, which is also the end of the tournament. The tournament and the Oscars are lining up this year. I think
Yay!
We're doing our special end of. I don't know. As of this recording, who's left in the tournament? It's one of the closer years. I think it's anyone's race still, but Maybe not as of this when you're hearing this, but if you have things to recommend to us, Films with the Women of My Life on Facebook, reach out to me on Instagram. That's where the tournament is, the listener tournament, Brennan_podhost. And you can email the show, filmswiththewomen@gmail.com. Also on YouTube, just search Films with the Women in My Life. Thanks for being on Flamin' Hot, ladies.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Until next time, this is Brennan signing off, saying thanks for listening and enjoy your movies.
Thanks for listening to Films with the Women in My Life. If you enjoyed being a listener in our life, please rate and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app. Keep up with the latest from the show on Instagram at Brennan_podhost, on Facebook at Films with the Women in My Life, and on Twitter at FilmsWomenPod. Finally, you can email the show with questions and suggestions at filmswiththewomen@gmail.com. Original music for the show was created by Ian Burke and Chris Iwanek. Original artwork created by Nicole D'Alessio. This show is produced by Brennan Snyder. Thank you again for listening and enjoy your movies.